Today I spoke with Coach Jeff DePelto. He's the current head coach at Berkshire School, which is a co-ed boarding school in Massachusetts. Coach Jeff is in his second year at Berkshire, but his first year as the head coach. He's been a part of USA men's basketball as well as Snow Valley basketball camps. In 2015, he was selected as a winner of Nike's America's Got Basketball Coaching Talent contest and spoke at the Nike Championship Basketball Coaches Clinic in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. His speech, Growing as a Coach, was produced and marketed by Championship Productions. There's a lot of good insight from today's conversation, so let's roll it back and see how it went. All right, Coach, so tell us a little bit about Berkshire School. It's an all-boys school, right?
So we are co-ed, and we're a school of about 400 students, and we're located in the western part of Massachusetts. And so we're a kind of traditional New England prep school. So we go through grades 9 through 12, and then we also have about 10 to 15 postgraduates a year at our school. So those are students who graduated high school, but are going to take one more year before they head off to college for a variety of reasons. It can be for maturity. It can be in the classroom, physical maturity, you know, and just to be a little, get a little bit more experience under their belt before they head for college. A lot of the postgraduates come for athletics. But you know, as a school, it's really, really well-rounded. We offer all of our students will do something every afternoon, and that can be sports, it can be arts, it can be theater, you know, it can be advanced math and science research. So it's a really talented group of students and faculty, and about 93% of the students live on campus, and about 98% of the faculty live on campus. So, you know, throughout a school year, we become this giant family. So it's a really awesome place to live and to work, and definitely to coach in.
Wow. Okay. That's interesting. I don't really know a lot about those types of schools. So then is there a scholarship? Is that how it works?
So there is, you know, I would say about a third of our population will get some form of need-based financial aid. But there's a lot of our students that don't. And so you see this great range of, you know, socioeconomic background. You know, there's a really interesting amount of diversity. I think we have over 30 states represented and close to that many countries from around the world. So it becomes this really awesome melting pot of all different kinds of beliefs and backgrounds. It really is a truly interesting place.
Cool. Okay, so I was looking at your bio, and I saw that you coached guys that have gone on to D3, D2, D1, and even the NBA. So what are some things that you did from a coaching standpoint to help get those guys to those levels?
So I think I like to think that I coach them all the same way. I coach them all really hard, but also spend a lot of time focusing on fundamentals, a lot of time on footwork, a lot of time on finishing. You know, we don't spend a whole lot of time doing combo moves and crazy step back finishes. But we spend a lot of time on the various programs that I've coached in teaching them how to play defense. And ideally, you know, in a perfect world, any school that recruits one of our players is going to be, they're going to be able to transition into that system. And then we also try and in boarding school, because they're already living on their own in a dorm. You know, I think they get preparation from the academic standpoint. You know, they're in study hall 2 hours a night too. So they get some independence, but they also learn some structure to their days. But from the coaching standpoint, it doesn't change a whole lot. And I think the biggest differences are the size and the speed and the quickness and the athleticism. That's really what has dictated the difference between a lot of the players that I've coached. You know, I think a lot of the Division III guys as a senior or a postgraduate in their last year that I've coached them, they may have been further along than some of the Division I guys, because, you know, they're getting recruited at that level for their ceiling. But skill-wise, you know, there's very little difference to what we teach and what we try and get them comfortable doing.
Okay. And I know that you've had some involvement with USA U17 and the U16 men's teams. So how would you say that those experiences have helped you become a better coach? Because those are some pretty, I mean, that's the best of the best for those age groups. So how's it helped you?
It's been unbelievable getting to see those teams. The first team that I ever got to kind of work closely with on a support staff role was a U16 national team that ended up going down. They won the FIBA Americas tournament, but Jason Tatum was on that team. A lot of guys
Wow.
that are still playing right now in the NBA playoffs. But you know, to see that talent level, but also to see how like Coach Don Showalter led that whole group, and he did such an amazing job for so many years that he coaches those guys the same way. So, you know, I talk about it in the last question that we coach our guys the same way. We would do line passing drills that we would do in you know, any kind of summer camp where you're teaching fundamentals and footwork. And so like that's where, you know, their athleticism was just off the charts, and that was a lot that I'd never seen before. But it kind of solidified to me that you're teaching the right things, and you're putting the right emphasis on things. And that was when I came back, and I started coming back from either October mini camps or the summer. A lot of I'll never forget one of my players. He ended up going to the University of Rochester in New York, and they play in the UAA, great Division III league. But he ended up being their all-time 3-point shooter in their program history. But the first time I came back, and he's like, "Does it suck to coach us now that you've been with those guys?" It's like, "No, I know you guys better than them, and to be honest, we're doing the same things in our practices that they were doing in theirs. You know, they just might be a little bit taller and can jump a little bit higher, but there's not a lot different going on from high level high school programs to high level college programs to the highest level. You know, it's those players." They focus on the little things and just mastering the little things, and they don't get bored with the basics. And I think that's one of the big things as I've grown as a coach, is I've spent less time worrying about necessarily the X's and O's and more time about getting players to become really good players and really skilled players. And then I found the X's and O's always work better because they figure out ways when those break down to be able to still finish plays and find teammates. And so, yeah, like I think it was definitely eye-opening seeing those players. And it's really cool to turn on ESPN or ABC and see that some of the guys that you've been on the court with on TV. But, you know, I think if anything, it's helped me become more confident knowing that, yeah, like if I'm teaching this, it's the same thing that the highest levels are teaching that we're teaching in our programs here.
Well, that's really cool to hear. So then, do you spend a lot of time at I don't want to butcher this name. It's Berkshire, right? Not Berkshire.
Berkshire. Yeah. Yep.
Berkshire. Okay. So do you spend a lot of time then at Berkshire on fundamentals?
Absolutely. So we have kind of a standard set of three drills that when our guys come in the gym, they're going to be doing. So we do, we call it lunge, squat, shot. It's just a form shooting drill where you go from a lunge position to a squat position, but your hips stay the same level. And then you get into your shooting form. So it really trains guys to be nice and low. They're going to do Mikans and see the ball go through the net 40 or 50 times. And then we'll get guys doing Coach Tate's Locks box drills that I learned from Coach Locke working Snow Valley Basketball School out in Iowa. And I think, you know, that combination of three, and I'll tell guys, if you've got 20 minutes, 25 minutes to work out and you've got to get to class, or you've got 25 minutes where you can get in the gym before your next thing, like do these three things. You're going to get quality reps in. You're going to build really great habits. And you're just gonna, you don't miss out. You don't waste time when you're doing stuff like that. So, yeah, those are kind of the standard things. And then within practices, we'll do a lot of line passing. You know, during our position work or in small group work, we talk a lot about screening angles, how to use screens. So it's not, I think if I wrote out a practice plan, coaches would look at it and say, "Well, this isn't that impressive," but I think the detail that we spend on that stuff really create some good habits for our guys. And you know, the difference I think with when I have postgraduate players is a lot of them come from high school programs where they've been really successful, but they may not have been pushed in their leagues. And, you know, here, the league that we're in, the NEPSAC, is just tremendous. You know, there's close to 200 kids a year that come from this league that'll play college basketball at some level. So pretty much every night, there's always going to be five student athletes on the court that are going to play college basketball, or if it's not college basketball, it might be college football, but it's just tremendous athletes. And so a lot of times guys can't get away with some of the bad habits that they could get away with. And that's what I really try and do with the postgraduate guys is spend a lot of time on them breaking the habits that they could get away with. And they might even still be able to get away with at this level, because at the end of the day, it's still high school basketball, but they're not going to be able to get away with at their next stop, wherever that is. And so that's been a huge for their development. And, you know, you can be a truth teller, which I think in a lot of cases, like public school coaches now, especially in areas that are saturated with independent schools or private schools, like, I don't know that they feel like they can coach kids as hard or be as truthful, because they feel like they're going to lose a kid to a transfer. And I think, you know, here we're lucky to be in a league where it is considered one of the best. And I'm pretty honest on the front end when I'm talking to families, that I'm going to tell you things that maybe you haven't heard before, but it's only to help you get better. It's not to make you feel bad. And I don't make things personal. But you might hear things that that's a great move and a good finish, but it's not going to work next year. And it's sometimes that's a shock to some of the guys' systems.
Yeah, I bet it is. So tell me then, you have guys that you said they're postgraduate. So they graduated high school and they're, you know, basically looking for a prep year, it sounds like, before they go to college. But you play against other high schools. So how is that fair, I guess?
So the league that we're in is all schools that have fifth year kids in some regard. So they might come in, it's all independent schools. Some are independent boarding, some are independent day schools, but we don't play any of the public schools or Catholic schools in our state, in our various state associations. So this league covers seven states in the Northeast. And so the travel is actually not as bad as you'd think it is. When I was coaching down in North Carolina, our travel was a lot crazier. The school that I coached at, we were in Asheville, and we'd play games out in Raleigh-Durham, and that was a 6-hour drive each way. So for our league in New England, you're rarely traveling over two and a half hours to a game, and most of them are within an hour and a half. It's just an area that's saturated with boarding schools, and they're great schools. They're schools that have been around 100 years, so it's not like, you know, and I've had plenty of players from out west or down south that there might be some prep schools down there that operate a little bit different, and the ones that don't necessarily give prep schools a great name. But here they're all traditional. And so like at most of the schools, like the boys, for instance, are wearing a coat and tie to class. And, you know, there is a lot of structure. I mean, we have close to 20 advanced placement classes that we offer. And so we'll see a range of students, but the highest flyers will never run out of classes here. And so even a student who comes as a postgraduate, like this year, we've got two boys coming in that are already committed to Ivy League schools. So, you know, they'll come in and they're going to continue along their curriculum that they finished last year. So, you know, like one, he was in, he finished BC calculus, AP calculus BC last year at a school. So he's taking multivariable calculus here, and he's taking a 6th level Chinese class for a world language. And so we just got so much depth, they can continue on and still keep pushing themselves in the classroom, so they don't get bored there either.
Right. Wow. Okay. So I have a lot of questions about this. So then tell me, are you out looking at high schoolers and you see seniors and you're like, oh, we gotta convince them to come to my school for a fifth year of high school? Or how does that work? I mean, are they recruiting you? How does this work?
It's a little bit of a two-way street. You know, it definitely helps to have connections with, so a lot of our guys will play for different AAU organizations. And so, Sometimes it's kids on their teams that, you know, they might be a rising senior and something happened to somebody who was on their roster. Maybe they got injured going into that summer or during their senior year. And so they want another year to get a little bit more exposure or get a little bit more healthy. Some come from colleges. Some schools say, in April or May, gosh, we saw this young man at an AAU event and he's an uncommitted senior and I don't know how, but we can't take him right now. And so would you hold on to him for a year? Some schools will do that. Or, when I first started, I kind of ran the whole camp circuit in the Northeast and worked every camp that I could. So a lot of the guys that I was roommates with that were college assistants at the time have now climbed the ladder and they're head coaches. And, they may see somebody out and shoot a text and say, hey, this might be somebody that I'd recruit in a year if he came and did a postgraduate year. So it's a really wide range. As far as younger kids go, we have a rule where we're not allowed to make first contact with families for younger kids. And so I can't just go to the local high school down the street and hand out my business card to, the best player in the gym. If they end up sending an email and say, hey coach, I'm really interested in your program, then that would start the process for recruiting. But it's not quite like college where you can just go to an event and pick people out. So it's a little bit of a mixed bag. And then, some places, the longer that you've been there and if you've had success, the name brand works really well and you don't have mm-hmm. to do a whole lot. A lot of interest comes to you. So like at Berkshire, this will be my first year leading the program here. Mm-hmm. And so we're doing a lot of really good building here. Like our team motto this year, we kind of stole this from a friend who coaches at another school and he's had a lot of success for the last 20 years. He's got a sign in his office that says you drink from a well that somebody else dug. And it's awesome. And it's so true because, now his team plays in all the best events and guys, once people know that guys are going there, they're going to get good recruitment because they know that they're going to get coached and they're going to play a great schedule and they're going to be better. Mm-hmm. And so our motto this year is dig the well. So we're going to really set mm-hmm. what our culture is going to be like moving forward. And so in 2 and 3 years, hopefully I can hang that sign in the office and get our guys to really buy into that. But it runs the gamut and everybody does it a little bit different, but every prep school up here is a little bit different. And so like for me, where we are, there's two other really great boarding school programs right down the road within 15 minutes. There's Salisbury School, which is an all boys boarding school. And then going in a little bit in the other direction, 15 minutes is Hotchka School, which is like one of the best boarding schools in the country. It's like a huge, almost like a college campus. It's unbelievable. Oh, and wow. Just high flying students. But if you went and visited all three, two of them wouldn't feel right because we're all so different from each other. So it's good to visit. Like usually coaches, if somebody comes on our campus and they're like, well, we love it, we'll usually encourage them, well, you should visit a couple other places just to make sure, because the fit is really important because every school is so different. Like we're situated under a mountain, so we've got a lot of trails and we'll do hikes as a team and we'll use it a little bit for conditioning, but you've got to like to be outside where we are too. And, mm-hmm. and so it's kind of the fun, but at the end of the day, we all work together within the league to kind of help each other out too. Every year in the spring, if somebody's got unsigned seniors or postgraduates, people will be on Twitter. And if I'm posting about one of the players that played for me, three other coaches will retweet it and they'll say, oh my gosh, we played against them this year and he's awesome. Like you got it. So we all kind of help each other. Mm-hmm. And so it's this really, we've got some awesome relationships between coaches where there's just a lot of respect. Like I even have this, this like trust pod between a few coaches where we'll get in a Zoom room. We did it a bunch over COVID and we'll throw out a topic like your culture, what's unique. If I went and played for you, what am I going to get? And just kind of compare notes. And I think the thing that we've all come to in our league is like, is 2 days or maybe 3 days of the year really worth not having a great relationship with the people you coach against? And, we really like each other. And so it's fun. And I love beating my friends that are coaching other schools, but I also love, keeping up with how they're doing and how their families are doing and how their programs are doing. because it all, like, we're all so different. And early on, I think I was very like us against them and us against the world when I was coaching. And I started to realize, like, we're just so different. And that's, it was kind of like a really petty thing that, like, I'm happy when other teams have success against us, you know. It usually means they were either better than us, or like me as a coach or our coaching staff, we got to teach something a little better. So it's very, I don't know how many games, there hasn't been many throughout my career where it's been like totally even. And those are fun too, whether you win or lose, you know, you always, you'll shake hands with the other team. I don't know if you can do that anymore with COVID, but you know, you'll say good game, and everybody's going to learn from it, whether you won or lost.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I have more questions, but my final question about your school is do these students who come for to be a postgraduate, do they use a year of college eligibility?
They don't. And that is the big advantage, I think, versus, because early on I would talk to students who had the option to do this, and or maybe go to junior college, or just go to a school and play their freshman year and hope to transfer to a different level. And I think that is the big advantage. You're not competing against college kids, you know, and so that you could say is maybe a disadvantage, but a lot of these programs are so good and deep that you kind of are. And you may be competing against, if you end up coming and doing postgrad in your year and end up going to a really good Division III program, you might still every day in practice be practicing at somebody who's going to go play at a really good Division I program. And so the preparation is really, it's unique. And it's something definitely when families, you talk to families about it for the first time, like, wait a minute, how do you not use college eligibility, first of all? But it's I guess an advantage of it is that it's one way to do it. And for some, the JUCO route is a better route. You know, and not every student is going to be a fit at every boarding school. And so like we're in that fifth year, you can take the your boards again, you can take your SATs or ACTs. So you can maybe bring your score up there for the sliding scale for the NCAA. But if you aren't a qualifier from your GPA, then going to a post-grad year really doesn't help you, unless there's a couple, like, not loopholes, but ways where you can. If you have an IEP, then the NCAA will grant you sometimes two additional classes because of that IEP. And so then you can bring that core up, but you've got to be really close. And so in the past, like, I've gotten transcripts from students, and I'll say, you know, your best bet actually is to go JUCO because you've got to start getting NCAA qualified, and your test scores are fine, but your GPA, we can't help you with that here. And so that's really kind of a part of it too, is making sure that the students are fit, and making sure it's not a two-way, and making sure it is a two-way street, that if a student's going to come to you for a year or 2 years or 3 years, it's not only you as a coach and as a program that's going to reap the benefits of that, that the student can do the work at your school, can have a really good experience holistically, and they're going to get better and hopefully get, you know, more exposure and reach their potential. But if it's only a situation where, you know, the student is going to be frustrated and challenged because they're either not getting pushed enough in your program academically or on the court, then that's just not good business, you know? And so I think that those are a lot of the conversations that I think all of the coaches, the really good ones in prep schools, are willing to have with families, is maybe you are going to walk away from somebody who'd be really good, who isn't going to be a fit. But you just try, and, you know, when families make the effort to reach out to you, I'd like to think that coaches are going to, even if it's not a fit, help them in some way, help point them in the right direction of somewhere that could be a good fit.
Right. So you have a speech, Growing as a Coach, and it's been produced by Championship Productions and widely marketed. Can you give me, well, can you give anyone listening really a summary of that speech?
Sure. So this came out of, I ended up getting selected for this contest that the Championship Clinics, the Nike Championship Clinics were doing, called I think it's America's Got Coaching Talent. I think it was right when the America's Got Talent show was out on NBC. And so they played along with that. And I ended up getting selected for this. And it was at a really interesting time in my coaching career where I felt like I was kind of turning the corner. So it was 2015. 2011 was when I started doing stuff with USA Basketball. And the real thing, great thing that came out of USA Basketball was I ended up getting invited to coach Showalter's Snow Valley Basketball School in Iowa. And that's like really, in my opinion, the best teaching basketball camp in the country. And so a little background on it, the camp runs from 6 a.m. to 11 p.m. every day. And there's only one game per day. And it originally started out in Santa Barbara. And then Don worked the camp in Santa Barbara. And I believe he would go out and he would work John Wooden's camp at UCLA. Then he'd go up to Herb Livesey ran Snow Valley in Santa Barbara. And so Don ended up opening Snow Valley in Iowa. And when I went out for the first time for USA Basketball, it was to be an observer for the U18 national team trials. And Don was out there getting his U17 team ready to go, which was Jabari Parker and Julia Okafor. And I think Tyus Jones was on that team. And it was just like an awesome group. But I ended up going up to Coach Showalter, I think outside the dining hall one day. I said, good luck in world championships. And at that time, USA Basketball was starting to gain some steam, but didn't have a ton, not like it does now. And so Don had said, man, if you know who I am, you're a basketball junkie. And I've got this camp in Iowa, and in 3 weeks, I'm going to be back there. So if you want to come work it, I'll fly you out to camp. And wow. And that'll be your pay for the week. And so I called home. I asked my wife if I could be away for another week. And she said, sure, if you think this is going to help you. And I went there, and it was just amazing. I think the camp, the structure is unbelievable because the kids don't fuss one bit, and they're doing these 1 hour long clinics on a specific skill at a time all day. And then they get those games at the end of the day, and it's like the icing on the cake. But the teaching is unbelievable. Don has a bunch of former NBA coaches, college coaches at the Division I level out there. And so there's just so much sharing, but there's no lines in the sand. And I don't know if you've worked camps before, but I know when I started working camps, there was always like this unspoken thing like, oh, this coach is here and he's had a lot of success. Well, you can't bother him. Like, don't bother him. You're just a high school guy or you're just an assistant mm-hmm. coach. And at Snow Valley, it's almost like the bigger the name, the more they pull you in and want to share and they want to learn about you and they want to help you grow as a coach. And so it's this unbelievable family that it's so special. And so that pushed me to really grow. And so that's kind of where this speech came from. But from that point on, I just became, and I stole this from Kevin Eastman, but I just became like a never-ending learner. And it was just, I was on this never ending quest for knowledge about coaching, about finding ways to get better. And my coaching improved, our program got significantly better. You know, within 2 years, we went to our first New England championship game. We won it. And then, in the next 5 years, we went to two more finals. So we went to three finals in 5 years in an unbelievable league. And it was just focusing on a few things, but I focused on six areas, and it was really my first assistant who stayed with me for a long time. He actually coached me when I did a postgraduate year. And he stayed with me for 3 years, but he still teaches at that school. This is his 40th year that he's starting. And I sat with him and I said, well, what are the biggest areas that you've seen me grow? And so that's where we came up with these kind of teaching points and bullets. But the big ones were energy and dedication to your players and your program. And that was like your players need to see and know that you care about them unconditionally before you can really coach them hard. So it seems kind of common sense, but the players have to come first and understand that without players, there's no program. There's not even coaches without players. And so that was like number one. And just the idea that you set the tone every minute, every day. It's not the player's job to set the tone. They've got to rise to the tone that you set. And then the second was commit to teaching the game better than anybody you play against. And even at this time, like I read that and I think I probably was still at the point where it was a little bit of an us versus them. But now I think of that more as like a complimentary thing. Like if we play against somebody and they totally shred us up in on offense or on defense, I'm like, man, I've got to get better so I can be better than them next time we do that to them. And it's like that, you know, Ginger Miller to Fred Astaire, why do you think we work so hard to make it look easy? And the idea of not overcoaching, but teaching. And, you know, when your team steps on the floor, making sure that they're prepared and they compete at all times, like that's the biggest piece of that. And then knowing why, like, you know, and I had this phrase, cause at the time when I wrote this, I had a 5-year-old, and it was like, think like a 5-year-old who asks why all the time. And if you teach something, know why you teach it. Don't just teach it because you did. And early on, I taught stuff because I knew it well enough to teach it, and probably because I ran it. But other than that, there wasn't a whole lot of conviction behind what I ran. And then understanding that all kids are different and they learn different, and the way you teach has to change year to year and even player to player within your team. So, you know, this is a way that I adapted to connect to more players, and where, you know, if I knew I had a player on my team who wasn't, you know, by running through it, repping through it, it wasn't going to connect as much, I'm going to have him to the office and watch film so he can see himself and see where he needs to be, or, you know, give him a piece of the diagram and say, all right, I want you to draw up where you're supposed to go so they can get it from different ways. You know, the next point was this never ending quest to improve, you know, seeking knowledge. The idea that if you're the smartest person in the room, you need to find a new room. Mm-hmm. And so I had a coaching clinic that I hosted, and, I was lucky enough, Coach Showalter came out to speak, and Bob Hurley Sr. came up to speak. And they didn't speak till later in the day, but they were two of the first people in the gym. They were in the front row and they were taking notes all day from people who had far less wins and far less success. And like, if the idea that the best coaches and the best players in the world can always get better, like, then we all can get better, you know? The next point was the ability to listen and learn. And I think this is really hard for coaches, especially when you get a group of coaches together, because I think the natural inclination is to get into this contest of who knows more and like oversharing. And this is one of the things I found early on when I'd work camps, is like to feel like I belonged in the room. I did too much talking and not enough listening. But you know, that's like, now I'm like constantly trying to find rooms where I don't know the most, or, you know, where I just don't know anything. I was at a Zoom this summer that a coach invited me into, and it was like 3 or 4 staff from the Charlotte Hornets. And I say this like a little bit embarrassed, but also not embarrassed, because it still means I have so much room to grow. They used terms I'd never heard before in basketball, and it was like NBA terminology, but I spent probably half of that just writing down words. And I spent the next like 2 weeks just like Googling or like trying to figure out what it was. It was awesome. Like, and some of the terminology was stuff that I teach and stuff that I do, but like just to learn it a different way. Even if you learn it, the same thing that you do, and at the end of the day, walk away figuring out, you know what, I think I actually teach this better than the clinician I just learned from. At least you've learned, and it gives you a little bit more confidence in what you do. And then also listening to your players, your team leaders, like they know the pulse of the locker room, and they're there at times when you're not. So being able to pull them aside and say, all right, am I reading this right? Or what are you hearing? What are you seeing? How do you think we can be more effective? Putting trust in those players, I think that really empowers them and it helps your program at all. The next one was the evaluation, the ability to recognize and fix. So not be too proud to think about what your weaknesses are. That same coach, his name's Dave Godin, who I wrote this with, he would always say to me, especially early on, but we'd go into timeouts and I was very not confident early on. But he would say, it's like, coach, what do we need to adjust right now? He'd say 2 things. What are we doing well? And what do we need to get better at right now? And he'd say that during practice. He'd say that during games. He'd say that after games. About planning, and it's so simple, but it's so effective. And then with players, it comes with, I think, experience. And so, especially when you're talking about roles, talking about what level they can play at the next level, you know, but even when you program, like, what are we doing well as a program? What do we need to get better at? It's such key questions to keep asking. And then the final piece was communication. And I think for young coaches, this is a more difficult one to master. Like, can you communicate the reality of what's going on to players and parents and not lose them? Can you get them to understand and be realistic about their potential and where they are right now, and not lose them? And I think, you know, some of the best advice Coach Showalter shared at a clinic of his was, when you're talking to parents about their child, you have to first understand that you're talking about two different people entirely. And when he said that, I kind of scratched my head. He said, you know, when you're talking about your player, you're talking about one of 13 to maybe 15 players on your roster. When you're talking to the parent about their child, you're talking about the center of their universe. So it's two different people. And part of it is, you got to understand, you may never be on the same page, but at least if you can, and I've been in plenty of conversations where I've laid that out to families. And I say, as a parent myself, I want to advocate for my child the same way that you do. I want to be as passionate about their success, but I'm talking about your child in this position that he's in, where he's one of 13 other people on this team. And so sometimes it helps frame the conversation. Sometimes it doesn't, but at least if you lay that out there, sometimes you can walk away and say, all right, well, at least we can agree to disagree, but I know where you stand. But that was a hard thing to learn. And especially as a young coach, I was 24 years old as a head coach. And, you know, so sometimes I was talking to parents close to, not quite three times my age, but close. And so, you know, to earn that respect and be able to have those conversations was hard. I think a cool thing that I picked up is communication circle. A lot of programs do this in some way or another. But at the end of every practice or every workout, I've got to figure out a way to do this with COVID. Our guys will circle up. In previous years, they would hold hands, and then we'd give a prompt, and we would have them sometimes, you might say, look to the person to your right and tell them one thing they did well today. And so they'll look in the eyes, and they have to look them right in the eyes. If they're looking down or they're mumbling, you'll say, nope, you have to look them in the eyes. So they'll say, you know, Johnny, today you did a great job of boxing out. And Phil, today you did an awesome job of running the floor. And then you'll add to it. The next day it might be, you're going to tell the person to your left something that you need to get better at, that you want to focus on tomorrow. And they're going to be the one that holds you accountable to that. So it might be, Jeff, tomorrow I want to do a better job of talking on defense. So if you're in practice, and I'll either have a manager or an assistant coach write down all those notes. And so I'll kind of peer at it in between drills, you know, when they're getting a drink. And if Jeff's not talking in practice, I'll say, or if, you know, Johnny, you're supposed to be holding him accountable. He's been pretty quiet. And so it gets everybody involved a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think the best communication circle prompt that can really bring a team together, and this is when they're starting to build trust, but you bring them in and you have them say, tell the person next to them or tell the whole group something about themselves that nobody in this circle knows. And if you're a month or two in and these guys have been roommates and they've, you know, been playing video games in each other's rooms and you've maybe started to travel, they know a lot, but sometimes that can get really deep and it brings teams even closer. And that was one where, you know, I've seen Coach Showalter would do that with the USA basketball team as they get closer and closer, and particularly special. And I think it comes into effect like in a boarding school environment, but with USA basketball, they had kids from all over the country. So they're going through different things and different worries and different things that excite them. But you can also throw really fun ones in there. Like if you're trapped on a desert island and you can pick one person to be with you, who would you pick and why? And so it was a really good communication exercise. And by the end of the year, you may start holding hands. In the first practice, when they would have to hold hands, they're very like delicate with one another. There might be a couple fingers grasping to each other. And then about a week in, they're really holding on. And usually by like week three or four, they're like right next to each other and their arms are locked or around each other's shoulders and they're like totally locked in. And that's when you start to know they're really trusting each other. They don't care that they smell because it's the end of practice and they're dripping with sweat. So that's where it was. And then I actually did this round table with a bunch of coaches probably about a month ago, and I added to it and kind of talked about a little bit of the differences, like keys to growth pre-2011 and then post-2011. And it really, I think it now has gone more to like getting out of your comfort zone as a coach. You know, the times when I've gotten out of my comfort zone have been times where I've really grown. So going to USA Basketball, not knowing a single person there, going to Snow Valley in Iowa, not knowing a single person there, and having to introduce myself, kind of having to prove myself, like to teach at Baskets at Snow Valley. If your lead clinician who's leading the whole clinic for a specific age group comes up to you at the end and says like, you crushed it. Like that's the best compliment you can get there. You know, developing coach to coach authentic relationships. That's huge. Like finding people that are willing to mentor you at all different stages, and then focusing on culture more than X's and O's and investment in your players and your program. Like those, if I were to go back and do like 2.0, that's what I would really focus on. And I think a lot of the stories that led to those would be very similar, but you know, I think that's where I've really changed a ton.
So how do you hold yourself accountable to do all of these things, you know, as far as give yourself a self-evaluation and coach each player differently and be a lifelong learner? How do you hold yourself accountable?
I think that's a really good question. I think it starts off with just constantly being willing to ask how things really are going. And it's easy to do it when you're not winning. And because like things aren't going right, you know, but it's a little bit harder to do when you are on these runs where, you know, you're on a 10 game winning streak and that masks a lot. And so you've still got to be willing to ask those questions. And so, I mean, part of it is I've gotten really good at getting caught in those kind of smoke and mirrors moments. But I constantly ask it. And I think assistants that I've had in the past probably are like, what's up with this guy? Like he's always asking, what can we do better? And we had a year down in North Carolina where we won, I think it was like 10 or 11 in a row, and we beat some really good teams and we had it going. And I was still walking into practice, or we go into our practice planning meetings and like, all right, what do we need to get better at? Like, what are we not doing well right now? It's like, coach, we just won our 9th game in a row, but we can still get better at something. Like let's focus on our screening angles so I think I think it's surrounding yourself with people that you know are truth tellers to you too, and not yes assistant coaches or yes friends. There's four of us that are Snow Valley coaches, and every year at some point we'll usually share film with each other. Or we'll talk through like just issues going on with our teams and what would you do? And that's like this total truth trust group where no matter what they say, you don't take it personal. You know where it's coming from. It's to help each other out. But they may say like, hey, I watched your last game and your screens really suck this year. Like you got to get better at, your guys are getting there. The timing's off and you got to get better at teaching it. And you're just like, all right, that's where I got to get better. So sometimes it's having those people around you that are, that's so important. Like, so my dad is somebody who, he was actually an assistant my first year as a head coach. And he's still really close. So I'll send him film or he'll watch live streams of games and I'll walk out of the gym and I'll have a text with a bunch of bullet points from him. And I know exactly where it's coming from and why. You know, sometimes it's, you might be hard. I bet you were hard on the team in the locker room, but they actually did X, Y, and Z really well. The team that you played was just a little bit better. Or, you know, I know you won by a lot, but you should focus on these three things in practice. So kind of having those truth tellers in your life are so important because they hold you accountable too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right. My last question is, and I'm just real curious to hear your perspective. I've asked a few people this question. But what are some of the things that you think head coaches out there today either do just way too much of, or maybe they don't do enough of?
What I'd like to see more of, and I think I'm seeing more of it, is I would like to see less lines in the sand from levels of coaches. And I think we're getting there, especially with COVID and all of the free clinics that have just been out. And that's been amazing. And I think coaches everywhere have gotten a lot better because there was so much sharing this off season, or cut short season, whatever it was for specific coaches. But you know, I feel like when I started coaching, and in the first clinics I went to, it would be the big Nike clinics. And at the end of the coaches' speeches, they'd be whisked off and you'd never get to really ask questions once their time was up. And now, like, I do feel like there's more of coaches welcoming other coaches in for practices or in for Zoom sessions to help mentor coaches. Cause we need that in this business. We got to help each other out. And there's too many good assistants now that aren't getting opportunities. And a lot of it is because there's coaches that'll get fired and then they'll just end up getting another job. And it's hard to watch. And because I know a lot of really great assistants that just haven't gotten an opportunity and they've learned from great people and they deserve it, but there's only so many jobs out there. And so I think just this culture of being willing to help the next coach, whatever that means. It might be sharing notes. It might be having your practice. It might be, you know, calling an athletic director to say, this person would be an unbelievable hire. And it might be a little bit outside the box, but be willing to kind of put yourself out there to help the next coach. And I think that goes a long way because the era definitely is over where, you know, you see a job opens up and I can pick up the phone and I can call the athletic director and say, you gotta hire my guy. That doesn't happen anymore. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, but I would just love to see more coaches get a shot at all levels at, you know, from the top down, from the NBA down to high school. Cause I've done it more at the high school level, but you're on calls for references and a lot of times I'll say this coach just needs a chance. They're going to run an unbelievable program, but they just need a chance. And you could be the one that gives it to them and turns your program around. But that doesn't always work. There's always somebody with some kind of experience, and sometimes the known is a little bit less scary to administrators than the unknown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, going back to what you said about these lines in the sand, I feel like, especially earlier on for me, I got to a point where I was really frustrated with coaching clinics that would only have the keynote speakers be like Jeff Walls, Gina Auriemma, Kelly Graves, Muffet, McGuff, Neighbors, and that's it. There wasn't any opportunity for these successful high school coaches, D3, D2, you know, any other division. It was only these big names. And don't get me wrong, I could take a lot away from these coaches, of course, because they've been so successful. But at the same time, and I've said this before to other coaching friends that I have, I can't necessarily relate to Gina Auriemma or to Muffet McGraw. I don't get those kids. I don't have scholarships. I don't have those resources. I don't have pretty much anything that they have. So I don't necessarily want to take away from them more than I would want to take away from hearing from like a very successful Division III coach who can offer scholarships, or a very successful high school coach. You know what I mean? I love these coaching clinics where the floor is just open for anybody. And there's a lot of successful high school coaches, Division III, Division II, all over the place that arguably if you threw them in the seat at a Division I program, they would just knock your socks off. Because they're just so successful. So I really, it frustrates me when I see coaching clinics that, and I get it. Gino Auriemma, if he's posted on a coaching clinic, they're going to get people to buy tickets. I get it. But at the same time, I mean, come on, like let other people that have had some success share the hot seat and just let them share, because I don't know. It frustrates me. That's just my opinion.
I agree with you. And I think a lot of it is about opportunities too, because the first time that I spoke at a coaching clinic was my own coaching clinic. But it was hard. And so I think that's another thing. It takes practice to be a good clinician in these. But there's good coaches everywhere at every level. I think some of the best coaches out there are youth coaches. You think about the resources and the time that they have to work with in a really good feeder youth program. There's one right down the road from our school, and the coach who runs it is unbelievable. And you're talking about, he gets an hour to an hour and a half with his teams. And I watched them play, and they go right up through the high school level. And every year that high school is successful. And my cousin coaches youth football, and went to a football coaching clinic, and it was the best start. And I've started using this when I speak at clinics now, but I'll ask for, and this football coach asked, who are the youth coaches in the room? And there was maybe like 10 or 15 in the room. And he's like, let's first of all, give them a round of applause. Cause if we're high school or college coaches, we don't get kids that know what they're doing in football without the youth coaches. And it's so true. And, you know, the other thing is with high school coaches or college coaches, if a lot of them are lucky enough to go to these professional development opportunities through money from their schools. And when you've got youth coaches doing this, like a lot of time they're doing it out of pocket and just trying to get better and not really for themselves. Like if they're a youth coach and they're paying out of pocket, they're trying to get better for their kids that they're working with. And that's like the cool thing about the USA Basketball Coach Academies, I think, is they're a little bit more affordable price point. And they're talking with all levels, so they'll get the big name coaches, but even they've done a good job, I think, of getting the big name coaches to even break down the teaching to maybe simpler, youth high school level. But yeah, I like everybody deserves an opportunity. And I think like, I love the group Rising Coaches on Twitter. I follow them and I think they do a really good job of promoting really great assistants and giving them a platform. And I think it's, but there needs to be more of that because there really isn't a difference. A good coach at you name the level is going to be a good coach at you name the level. It doesn't matter. And the resources might be different. The facilities are definitely going to be different. But if you can coach, you can coach. I'm a big believer of that. And I think that's part of growing into it. You start to realize, like, it doesn't matter. Like people can coach at every level, and I've gone to plenty of youth practices and filled up more notes than I have going to a Division I basketball practice, because again, it relates a lot more to what I'm doing and what I have to teach and how I can teach. And sometimes learning how to teach it a simpler way is going to help me a lot more than trying to, you know, teach it like calculus. And you have one other question that I want to give a plug to about books or podcasts that we recommend.
Okay.
I have to say this, because this was like a game changer for me through COVID, but Annie Duke's Thinking in Bets was like an unbelievable read that changed how I think. So it's all about decision-making when you don't have all the facts or don't have all, you know, the answers. It's an unbelievable book. It's a quick read, but I'd recommend that for any coach. And she's also got a new book coming out, I think this month. So, for those that don't know, Annie Duke is a professional poker player. She won the World Series of Poker, and, it's just awesome. Awesome, awesome read. So I wanted to plug that.
I've heard about that book from Mike Neighbors.
Yes.
No, I started it. I haven't finished it, but it is, I will also beep Annie's horn. It is definitely a great book so far. Well, thank you, Coach, so much. I appreciate you coming on. And it's so funny how I get through I ask you a few questions that are on script and I'm thinking, wow, this is going to be the shortest conversation ever. And then all of a sudden it's one of my longest because we could just talk hoops forever, but thank you.
No problem. Thanks so much for having me. And yeah, let's definitely stay in touch. This was great. I enjoyed it.